Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. Well, it's super fun today to have two guests who are going to continue the conversation with me about Vashon World AIDS Day. It's an incredible project, and I recently spoke with Peter Serko. He told me a lot about it. But my guests today, Chris Basha and Kate O'Kane, have their own perspective, and I think it'll just add to the picture of this great event that's coming up on the 7th and 8th of December. So I don't know too much about your backgrounds, and I would love to hear from each of you a snippet describing who you are, letting listeners know, and also what pulled you specifically to this project. Chris, do you want to start?
Sure. First of all, Kate and I are friends. We're both in theater. I've directed her. We've acted alongside each other. In fact, I remember vividly working with her on our very first year with Vashon World AIDS Day on a play called The Normal Heart. And we've just been connected ever since. And that was five or six years ago.
And was it just happenstance that you did The Normal Heart, or were you already drawn to the topic of AIDS?
It was actually the first year of Vashon World AIDS Day, and Peter had started it and got into partnership with DramaDoc and started the play. And I was lucky to be cast in one of the roles, and Chris in another. And so our interaction with Vashon World AIDS Day started then. But I think the history for both of us with the AIDS movement and HIV started much earlier. So, Chris, why don't you tell a little bit about how you got started in AIDS activism?
I was very much part of ACT UP back when I was a young boy in New York.
Were you there at the time David Serko was doing his work with ACT UP?
So I didn't meet David Serko. Uh-huh. But a few years later, I directed a show out that Peter might have told you about, which was all about David's life. I didn't mean it, but I know so many people that knew David. So I really feel like I did know David. And you know, back then I was a young 20s kid. I had the world ahead of me and all this, and I thought, oh, you know what? We'll be activists now, and then in 10 years it'll be all over with. We'll cure all of this. And here we are 40 years later. That was my first draw, not only to World AIDS, but to activism in general.
Wow. So you were part of the famous ACT UP. You know, I can't wait for the movie to inform me a little bit, the movie that's going to happen on Sunday.
Sunday,
right?
Yeah.
How to Survive a Plague.
And the name of it is?
How to Survive a Plague.
How to Survive a Plague, because even now it sounds like a slightly dreadful topic, I expect to be inspired by what ACT UP really accomplished.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also depends on how you look at AIDS. I mean, AIDS is dreadful. But yes, this movie is very inspiring and very maddening too, especially with what's going on now here all these years later. We're all disappointed now in certain things, and
you want to be specific of what you're thinking about.
This is the current state of politics. And you know, Kate and I were talking on the drive over here, Okay, what were we talking about?
Well, we were just saying, you know, that there's never been a time to get more involved really again in activism when we don't really know where the state of the world is going. We seem to be further apart and polarized. And yet there are still these really big issues, whether it's HIV/AIDS, whether it's other diseases, whether it is just stigma and bias that are becoming more prevalent again. And, you know, I got involved in HIV/AIDS much later than Chris. It was around 2009. And I moved to Southern Africa, to Botswana, as part of my job in international development. And in Botswana at the time, 1 in 5 people were HIV positive. It actually hasn't changed. It's still that number. But what we're seeing now, because of years and years of investment and really, you know, an actual Republican president, George Bush, putting together the President's Emergency Fund for AIDS relief, so much of a difference has been made. And we're actually almost in a way taking a step backwards now, away from things that have happened before and getting much less investment made. This is a global disease. It's been stigmatized so many times as a gay disease. That's not the case. There are mothers, there are children, there are grandmothers who are dying of this or are living with it every day. And so it's incredibly important still to understand its relevance to where we are. And so, you know, personally, somebody coming into a new administration, stigmatizing it again as a gay disease has huge problems for me in terms of where this goes. So hopefully, doing our little bit on this island, talking about it, ensuring the next generation, you know, the middle school kids, the high school kids, understand why this matters has never been more important.
It's a great project. I can understand there might be a couple of significant challenges. One is, you know, there's a place in our rapid moving culture where, oh, that was last year's issue. Now we're on to these issues. And I can imagine, and I talked to Peter a little bit about that, where people say, well, AIDS, we took ground. That was then. Mm-hmm. This is now. Mm-hmm. Also the fact that we're not always so conscious of what's happening in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So people may be going through famines and horrible public health crises, but it's not in my backyard.
Yeah.
So how do we confront that, both of those, the idea of saying, yeah, been there, done that, AIDS was important, but now we have other things. And also, yeah, not in my back door. It's, you know,
yeah,
Botswana is far away.
Botswana is far away, but there's many people in this country living with HIV. And oftentimes it is stigmatized populations. And oftentimes it is those that have been forgotten or who healthcare leaves behind. So I think if you are of the mindset that, you know, even if it's not in my backyard, but it's still something that matters, it's important. I do think, as well, as we look at a more globalized world, what happens in Africa impacts here. You know, we can't pretend climate change is just something that's happening over there. We can't pretend that, you know, economies, if Africa has strong economies, the world does better. There's so many people living in Africa that could help us.
It feels like we're still in this provincial place, which unfortunately provincialism seems to have won out for this round of saying, like, make us great. Mm-hmm. And you go, no, we're in a global economy. Yeah. What's happening in Botswana will affect things that will affect you. We are interconnected. That's a point of view that's a little bit, it seems so obvious.
Yeah.
And yet it's,
I spend my days working with people in Washington, D.C., and I've really got to the stage where I'm not going to shout at people to try and believe in what I'm saying anymore. I'm going to grab the people who have open hearts and open minds and ensure that we can work together. Luckily, on this island, I do believe that the vast majority have those open hearts and those open minds. We also have an incredibly impressive young generation. Not everybody is of the same place, and that's fine. But, you know, it's the young people who are really looking at climate change. It's the young people who are looking at what's happening in Africa and saying, why are they not getting the choices and the chances that I am? So I think if we ensure that we are educating the next generation, making sure they're informed, and things like, you know, coming to the play on Saturday night, coming and seeing the exhibition that Matthew Shepard Foundation is bringing to us and showing us really the hate crimes that Matthew and his parents after his death.
Let's do the short form, because not everybody's going to know about the Matthew Shepard tragedy. What was that?
So Matthew Shepard was a young, beautiful gay boy, college student in Laramie, Wyoming, and just living his life And going out one night, he went out to have a couple beers at the local local bar. And he met up with two boys that didn't like him. Didn't like him because he was gay. They concocted a plan to rob him and ended up beating him to a pulp and tying him to a fence out of town and letting him hang there to die. He was found the next day. He was found alive and brought to the hospital, where he died 2 days later. And the world wept. This play, The Laramie Project by Moises Kaufman and the Tectonic Theater Company, is a verbatim account of eyewitnesses, folks that saw him last that evening, his parents, folks that didn't like him, folks that loved him, and the court proceedings, and the effect of the media, how it persuaded folks how to think, and religious zealots like Fred Phelps came to protest his funeral. But some good has come out of Matthew's death, and that's that Obama was able to get the hate crime bill passed, something that Bill Clinton couldn't do. And so that was good.
How do you listen? I mean, I'm listening, you know, I've heard a little bit about it before, but I can't hear it without tears, you know?
So yeah. I've been studying the script for over a decade. I've been wanting to do this play for a while. Mm-hmm. Mind you, what we're doing, traditionally what we do for World AIDS Day is we do one performance and we do a staged reading. It's not reader's theater. We're not sitting around reading out of books. I make it interesting, and I try to put the audience in the world. But I've been studying this play for quite some time, and I read it last night and I cried. It's so provocative and sad and inspiring, to know that we're not alone here, that, you know, people, but
I think those of us who are acting in it just see it as an immense privilege to bring it to people. I don't know that any of us are going to get through the performance without tears in our eyes, but that's okay. It's a deeply evocative piece, and you know, you sit there and you read it. You read plays all the time, and you're kind of like, this is great. This is a piece of fiction. This is amazing. This isn't fiction. This happened. And it's still happening. And that's what we need to remember.
The other part of it is that although this is about World AIDS Day, we're, you know, you immediately start thinking about the trans kids.
Absolutely.
And the Muslim kids, and who don't deserve the what they're getting. Yeah. And you think, well, is there a way that we can go in through what happened to in the gay community and what happened with AIDS, and then see its application even further out?
Yeah, I think that's why for us, as the sort of the people bringing together VASH on World AIDS Day, it's important not to just have the play or to have a screening. It's to have the community discussion as well. So
that's
there's an
vital
element.
That's vital. Yeah.
Who's leading the community discussion?
So I'm leading the one on Saturday night after the play, as
and
long
play
as I'm not
is,
crying.
at the high school at 7 o'clock, free of charge.
And what time?
6:30 is the curtain. We'll open the doors at 6 at 5, so that we can have in the gallery there'll be some postcards and letters and whatnot that were lent to us from the Matthew Shepard Foundation.
Great.
So people can read over that and whatnot, and then the show will start at 6:30, and then after the show at about 8:30. Kate will lead a discussion with...
Yeah, we have a great group from the community. So we'll have someone from Not On Our Island, the group that was set up this summer after some of the stigma and bias we saw on the island around Pride Month. We'll have someone from the Dove Project, who do a lot of work in community, really looking at advocating for how we can strengthen our roots in community. We'll have Liz Shepherd from the Vashon Beachcomber, who can talk a little bit about how media and, you know, the perception that media can put into community. And then finally, we will have Alice Block, who is with the Vashon Havura. I'm sorry if I say that incorrectly. So representing really the faith community, but she is also a member of the LGBTQ community.
Brilliant.
As well. So
Brilliant.
We should have a great chat.
And I understand it's a free event, but if people feel so moved, they can contribute to the Matthew Shepard
Foundation. What I like to say is that it's free to get in, but you have to pay to get out.
Good one, Chris. Yeah. Well, because the Matthew Shepard, his parents are still involved in this, aren't
oh,
they?
That's their lives right yeah. now. In fact, Judy Shepard, his mother, was just awarded this year the Presidential Medal of Honor.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, all these years later. And Dennis Shepard, you know, and they're not young folk anymore. So they've dedicated their lives to outreach and to programs like we're doing. In fact, Dennis Shepard himself will be addressing us. So that's really exciting.
That's very exciting. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. And it sounds like a wonderful place to put some money as well.
And we'll be accepting donations for the Matthew Shepard
Great.
Foundation.
Yeah, and if people want to find out about that, we'll also have a link in the show notes so people can find out a little bit more. Well, you're both actors. And as well as, Kate, you're doing a full-time role in development on international issues. Is
yes,
that correct?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. What's the role, in your opinion, of the arts, and particularly, you know, the acting world, in getting through to people in a different way?
Well, in the last few weeks, since the last election, I think I was just grateful that I had the script to study and rehearsals. Something to focus on, something that made me feel something, that made me feel useful. I'm not a rich man, so I can't write thousands of dollars of checks out, you know, to organizations that I believe in. So I have to move people. Theater is the way that I do that, especially with projects that I direct. Not so much with projects that I act in, because that's just fun. But projects that I direct, I really feel a responsibility to do important work, provocative work, work that makes people think, cry, or get angry, and make people move. You know, I'm 62 years old. I thought many years ago that I wouldn't have to carry banners and shut down bridges, which I've done. I'll still do it if need be, but I feel that my use right now is to get people to think, and somewhat to get people to donate. This really is the first year that we have made a push for donations. In the past, we've done more outreach in the schools and whatnot, but or concerts. And this is the first year we're being pretty
explicit.
Yeah, about it.
Money
yeah.
is going to help the situation.
Yeah, and you know, if you can't give now, if you can't give to the Matthew Shepard Foundation now, you know, next month there'll still be the Trevor Project. Speaking of, we mentioned trans before. The Trevor Project has had, since the election, their suicide hotline has gone up exponentially. I've heard up 700% in the last few weeks.
I worried about that, but I haven't had the stats.
And these are teens that are calling and saying, "I can't live anymore." So these organizations need us, even if it's a dollar.
Yeah. Yeah. That dollar is important. Mm-hmm. You put your money where your beliefs mm-hmm. are. And for those of us who are not likely to physically be able to go to the front lines mm-hmm. or do the kinds of things that mm-hmm. ACT UP was doing back in the 80s, we still need a vector. Mm-hmm. You know, we still need an outlet. We still need to be able to do something.
And it's also important to know, I was just talking about this afternoon with somebody that I met. It's important to know that, yeah, we do live in a bit of a bubble here on the island, and we're very lucky. It's a beautiful island with a lot of like-minded folk. But I feel like now we have even more of a responsibility to yell out to the rest of the country, to the rest of the world. And if every community around the country did what we're doing, I think we can rest peacefully a little bit anyway.
Yeah.
But Kate, you want to add to anything to that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with everything you've both said. I think for me, the reason to engage in this and why art matters so much is it's what we can do as artists. And I think there is a role for everybody. If you're a scientist, go out there and find the science cure for it. If you are an artist, find the activism through your art.
Songwriters.
Yeah, songwriters. I am so fortunate that I do work in international development, so I have a purpose there. But my passion is theater. And so I get to bring the two together. And that is just, I mean, I get shivers just about the gift that is to me. So to me, this is just something else that I can do that's within my grasp. And this sense, I think we all feel oftentimes about the helplessness, like, how can I make any change? What can I do? Well, you just start with something you can do. And then you see if someone else can join you and someone else can join you. And that's where art has such a role, whether you are creating a poster, singing a song, doing a play, you know, bringing a collage together. It all matters. It all has a message. We're all telling a story.
Yeah. And I think it can help interrupt the jadedness that a lot of us feel because, you know, I think I'm a little bit older than you guys. And there are a lot of folks who are in their early 70s, like I am, who just feel like we gave it our shot. Mm. You know, we really thought the world was going to be different with the protests, with the work against Vietnam, with the, you know, early civil rights and all. And look what a bloody mess we're finding right now. So what can we do? We're sort of at the tail end. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really alive question for a lot of us because we can't go back. But how to use your precious time and how to believe, how to still find hope.
I think that's where art as well can help, because art has to translate where we are as a country, as a culture. And sort of, you know, if you think about some of the plays or the films or the music that are coming out, there's new generations singing those protest songs. There's new plays being written. There's new films being created. And so, you know, I don't want the generation of, you know, early 70-year-olds to ever think that they didn't do something, because they laid the foundations for how those of us in our early 50s are taking it on, and those in their early 30s, and hopefully those in their early teens will continue it as well. So all of it together creates this beautiful, you know, history of activism and art, and it all has its place and it's all helping. It's like, you know, the iceberg, we're chipping little bits off until we've got this beautiful final thing that we can look at and say we're there now.
It's beautiful, because there's the issues, the presenting issues, you know, that you'll be documenting it, but there's also this whole piece of how to re-embrace activism, how to trust, how to hope, how to re-engage, especially when it feels so overwhelming. You know, like the odds don't look really great this year.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. And I think that's why, again, we've thought that the community conversations are so important, because we'll have people on the Saturday night who are thinking about this from community, from media, from religion and faith. And then on the Sunday, when Peter has a community Q&A after the screening of How to Survive a Plague, there will be some artists from our community who have used activism in their work and, you know, really have created the most amazing kind of conversations from that and shown their feelings. And those still live on. We still have those things out there that allow us to tell the stories again in a new way.
I know for myself, you know, in this sort of oversaturated information AI economy, it's so easy to just have so much coming through that it doesn't catch, you know. Mm-hmm. But when you tell me the story of Matthew Shepard, it hits my heart immediately. And all of a sudden, I'm open to listening to things in another way. Mm-hmm. And there's something about arts to me that can capture head and heart together in a way that I think we need, because if it's just more information about more problems out there, there's so many. It's really hard to latch, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of the Laramie Project, I don't expect for everyone to enjoy it. I don't think people will enjoy what they're watching. I also think that it might trigger some audience members, and that's fine. It may make people scream. It may make people cry. People might walk out, and that's fine. I don't know why I'm saying that. I guess I'm warning the listeners here
we live in difficult times and we have to embrace that difficulty. We have to embrace the hardness and acknowledge it and in some ways accept it before we're going to be able to come up with new solutions. So, you know, history isn't easy. And I think we've seen in this country people wanting to rewrite history or pretend history isn't happening. And so, again, you know, why does this matter? Why are we doing it now? Because it needs to be done. It needs to be. This history needs to be told still.
Yeah.
Both the presentations, both the play at the high school and the movie are very graphic. We're not editing anything out. It needs to be told, like Kate said. So
it is complex, though, because I know I am one, and I know there are a lot of me's out there. I'm sensitive to issues. I'm sensitive to world issues, but I'm sensitive. And so hitting my nervous system with really graphic stuff, like I don't watch violent movies. I don't want to use my attention span on that. Mm-hmm. It bothers me. Now, because of the importance of the issues that you're talking about, I may be able to come and go through it. Yeah. But it is like, well, how do you open people to this, this happened, folks. This is real history. And yet know that some people are just so, how do I say, I'm waving my hands, so activated right now that they can't hear about a lynching, hear about a murder without it.
Activated. Well, not to make light of that, Sally, but you'll never find a more sensitive group of people than a bunch of actors. So bear that in mind as you all come and listen to this. You know, there's no one out there like actors for bringing the sensitivity. But, you know, I think that's why the Laramie Project is so so powerful, is that because it has this kind of documentarian kind of style to it, it allows you to actually feel that this is factual and raw. But also, it's a play. So you're not watching, you know, it happen right in front of you. There is still a narrative element to it. And, you know, the fact that it's not happening in real time. Yeah. And I think that helps, because that documentarian kind of like historical feeling to it matters.
And also the fact that you're holding a community conversation, because for me, that is like the breathing out portion of to be able to hear these people in the community that I value. Let's breathe together. Let's converse. So it's not just me in a room absorbing this, but that we're in it together and somehow we can process it together.
Absolutely.
Can I take a moment to shout out the cast?
You sure can.
Because it's just a great cast and we're just so excited. The cast is 11 folks portraying over 60, 65 characters.
Wow.
Each cast member gets to play different roles, and sometimes they just switch on a dime and play one role, and then the next sentence they're a different character. Kate O'Kane here, one of our island favorites, is in it. Kathy McNeil is just a pro. I did a play with her last year called See How They Run. Love her to death. A new actor, Philip Gorbachev, who's did a show here on the island this year called The Hatmaker's Wife, directed by my dear friend Samantha Sherman, who also happens to be in the play. Stephen Stern, new to the island. Erica Strandberg, the ever so funny Brian Palermo, Deidre Witt Dakota, Toby Nichols, John Whalen, and a young actor who I just saw this weekend in a play at the high school named Mateo Gray. Also, we've got Wes McLean doing some of the designs, some of the images that you'll see up on the screen. We've got Brooke Osment designing the lights. And gosh, I'm probably forgetting somebody, but that's our great crew of folks that are going to be presenting the show that night.
Well, this was a team effort. That's really quite an ensemble that you have. And I can feel just the fact that you'd interrupt this interview.
Yes, yeah. Well, I didn't want to forget.
No, but that actually is significant, because, you know, out there in the world, there's this me, me, me thing, you know, I'm so rich, I'm so famous, you know, as opposed to the we, look at who we are, look at what we can bring when we come together. So it is significant.
Oh, actors, you can't live with them, but you can't live without them. They're just, and I really am lucky to get some top notch actors. Everybody that I asked said yes this project. In fact, I go around the island and I say, hey, I need this. Would you help? Yes. We need cookies donated from such and such bakery. Yes.
That's great.
So
maybe talk about the other people who are helping with this, because
yes,
there are other partners that are supporting. So obviously, Peter Serco set up the David Serco Project, which is really at the forefront of this. And Peter has been just the brains and kind of the passion really since day one for the Vashon World AIDS Day. And we're now, I think this is our fifth year where we're doing something. We had 1 year off during the first year of COVID where we didn't manage to do something. And then alongside that, we are working with Not On Our Island that was set up this summer, the Vashon Repertory Theatre, who are really supporting with the play on Saturday night. The Vashon Theatre is giving us a screening at the cinema on Sunday, and alongside that, the Vashon Island Film Festival is also supporting that as well. I'm just thinking about who have I missed.
Well, let's not forget the Vashon High School.
Oh yes,
graciously donating their beautiful theater to our play.
How beautiful!
As well.
So this is really coming. It's really it's got community.
It's community.
Community in it. You know, because sometimes in the acting world, if you say acting to somebody outside the acting world, you think celebrities, because people so latch on to the idea of celebrities.
Well, that's how we think about ourselves, yeah. Sally. But we're letting that one go this weekend just for the greater good. But yeah.
Well, I actually think it's really good to remember that even in arts that require a lot of individual talent and effort, we rarely do it alone.
Yeah.
It's almost, even in the arts world, you know, having strong ties to community means so much. And all. I have one more question for you, but before I ask it, what should I have asked you that you'd like to speak to?
I'd love to just talk a little bit about that young generation coming through.
Yes.
One of the things that we've done in previous years for Vashon World AIDS Day is really do a connection with the middle school. And so myself and a couple of other people who have worked internationally on HIV/AIDS have gone in and talked about really what the epidemic looks like in Africa or Asia or South America. Because, you know, I think, again, here in the US, we do tend to think about it being very focused on the gay community and very focused in maybe on African American communities. But there, when you hear about young children, you know, HIV being transmitted through breast milk, or grandmothers raising young children because a whole generation of parents died from HIV related causes, it puts a different spin on this. You realize, I think, more the humanity and the fact that this is all encompassing. So I do think that, you know, when we think about this, yes, we're on this island and we have so many needs here. We're in this country and we have so many needs here. But that sense of whether it's all of the different partners that have come in together to work on this, just like all of the different people that need to come in together to make sure the world is working on this, there's a real sort of transference of needs and skills and just basically community that's at the heart of the whole thing.
Well, I'm so glad that you're bringing this to the youth as well as to all of us, but to the youth particularly, to the group that may not have heard some of the things that you have to share and can take off some of the blinders, that even if you don't see this right in your backyard, know that there's a mother who's dying and a child who didn't deserve to pick up a disease from breast milk.
Yeah. And then the other thing, and Chris can chip in on this as well, it's just like, I think there's a whole story of hope here, and it's very hard to sort of always see that kind of silver lining when we're talking about hate crimes and we're talking about people dying. But the progress we have made with HIV/AIDS in the last 20 years is phenomenal. People are no longer dying of this disease at the same rate. People are living with it. They're living with it because there are drugs that have been discovered that mean that they can live a very normal life. It's like living with long COVID, right? It's like living with, you know, my father's just been diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. He's living with it. And people with HIV/AIDS live with HIV/AIDS. They live very strong, important, professional, fulfilling lives. And so if we invest our time, our effort, if we find solutions, there's so much hope. And that's what actually keeps me going, is the differences I've seen from 2009 to now in terms of people living, mm-hmm. not just existing.
Well, you answered the last question I was going to give you, which is how personally do you deal with tough stuff and continue to find your hope? But I think you have a bit of your answer there. And now, Chris.
Well, she put it beautifully. Thank you, Kate. But there is a chapter in the Laramie Project. It's called HOPE.
Oh.
And really, yeah, hope. And how do we define hope? You know, it's not just a four-letter word. It gets redefined as we progress here, right? So I have hope. We have to have hope, but we also have to move. We have to make a difference. And hope is what helps us make the difference, right? Whether we scream or do a play.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some people treat hope like wishful thinking, or I'll try, or something like that, or mm-hmm. hoping that something's going to work out. That's a different kind of hope. I think hope is also an energetic. It's a little bit like love. Mm-hmm. You can fuel up on it and then use it to do the things that you need to do. And it sounds like you guys are really well fueled on that kind of hope.
Well, hope is not just a feeling. It's also a verb. So that's important to know.
That's important to know. Mm-hmm. Well,
One last thing, actually. There's a quote that is in the script that has been sitting with me whilst I've been reading it. And I was wondering if I could just say it.
Please.
Because it's actually from Chris's friend and colleague, Moises Kaufman, who actually created the Laramie Project. "The experience of working on the Laramie Project has been one of great sadness, great beauty, and perhaps most importantly, great revelations about our nation, about our ideas, about ourselves."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was 20 years ago when he wrote that.
20 years. Well, when I see great art, I am changed. You go in and it's not just about them, but you can feel yourself move. And that's what I would be expecting the weekend of December 7th and 8th, when you will be doing the stage reading of the Laramie Project at Vashon High School, starting at 6:30, with an opportunity to see the exhibit of letters and all before that. And then the movie itself at the Vashon Theater is at 1:00 on Sunday, to be followed by a really engaging Q&A. So thank you guys so much for the work that you're doing, for bringing this to us, for I think it brings us together as a community. To be able to say, you know, it's not just happening out there. We are part of it and we can do something.
I am also one last thing.
Of course.
We're always looking for folks to come and join us at the World AIDS Day. It's at the moment, it's really just the three of us. But, you know, if you've got an idea for next year, if you want to direct a play, or you want to be in something, or you want to show your art, or you want to go out into the schools and work with the kids, it's get hold of either me or Peter or Kate.
That would be great. I'm sorry I missed the Freddie Mercury night a few years ago.
Yeah, that was fun.
That would have been an uplift.
Yeah, you know? That was fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. I know it's a busy week for you, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank
Sally
you so
Fox,
much,
happy
Sally.
Holidays.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.